The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, thanks for being with us. It is a good Tuesday NFL draft right around the corner. We'll have Ed Werder with us today, ace reporter with ESPN. Ed has the job on draft night of covering the Cardinals, the Cowboys, the Seahawks, and the Broncos all remotely. I was actually reading something. It was Gil Brandt who put out that in Dallas, within like a mile and a half radius, Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett, who's now with the Giants, and then there was one other coach or GM. They're all going to be making drafts for their NFL teams, three different teams within like a mile and a half radius in this residence in Dallas, which I think is kind of cool. Again, goes back to, will we have hacking on Thursday night? So we'll talk with Ed Werder about the technology, about how does he prepare for the draft, what does he think the Cardinals are going to do, because Ed Werder is assigned to the Arizona Cardinals, and Ed will be with us. That comes up at 10:35 today. I'm going to talk about college football and a column that Stuart Mandel wrote today, and we're going to bring back a segment. If you missed it, last week we had Greg Byrne, the athletic director at Alabama, longtime friend on the show with us, and we talked directly about what would college football look like, and would Greg Byrne be opening to playing the college football season next spring? It seems to me now that the presidents of universities who have said, we are not going to play any sports if we do not have students in class, that now we're looking at whether it's November or December that schools open back up and that testing takes place. Stuart laid out the case of what would it look like if the college football season started on New Year's Day? And what would it look like if the college football season had its completion on Final Four weekend and March Madness and the two events combined to be one? It's very smart, I think. But there's some downside to it, and I'll get into that downside because it involves Trevor Lawrence and others. That will be coming up in about 10 minutes. Our opening comments are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, and that is with your life insurance. If you were just to take a look at your personal situation, do you have life insurance? Do you have any life insurance at all? If something happened to you today, would everything be taken care of, or would people be hamstrung in handling your affairs? Do you have a program called Peace Assured? It takes care of if something were to happen to you today and there was a funeral and the expenses of funerals. I see car washes on the news, so does Sagicor, and we don't like it. I have my license. I'm very happy to help people out. I've been able to do so through Sagicor, and we appreciate their partnership. That's at Sagicor Now. Just simply log on, pick up your phone, go to sagicornow.com. That's Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Eric joins us, and first, who's coming up on 2020 Vision today?
Today, we're going to catch up, Brad, with Saguaro senior linebacker Connor Tosi. Interesting backstory. He played as a backup behind a couple really good Division I linebackers, and then last spring, he tore his ACL and missed his entire senior season, but he was still a captain, and he was still at every practice and every team function. And I think for someone who has gone through the adversity before our adversity hit, I'm interested to get his perspective about what advice he's giving some of his other classmates who have seen their spring season cut short.
That's cool. It's very cool. That comes up at 10:50 on the stream. And Eric has been really taking charge on this. Sandy's had one, Jordan's had one, but you could probably do these for another month, right? There's kids all over the place.
I mean, we're working through it, but, you and I will talk later about that. But yeah, today we're excited to have Connor on. So
the NFL draft. I talked to an agent this morning, and I said, what do you hear about Brandon Ayuk? And he said, Brandon Ayuk will not get past the Philadelphia Eagles in the first round.
At pick?
I think it's like 20, 21, 22, somewhere around there. Okay. Brandon Ayuk will not get past the Philadelphia Eagles. So clearly there's some buzz out there that the Eagles have focused in on him. Benjamin, I can't really get a read on. Late second, third. It just depends on when the run on running backs. And because running backs do have that shelf life, it's not a big one.
I think it's interesting, Brad, because there are some whispers that there could be 7 wide receivers picked in the first round this year, and maybe 1 running back, if any, picked in the first round. It was really funny to watch Adam Schefter on SportsCenter yesterday tiptoe around a bit about how they did a mock NFL draft. Did you see that? Like the teams all
They did. They practiced. Yes.
They practiced, and more than a handful of teams forgot to mute their mics. Thursday is going to be so much. We're going to hear things on Thursday that we are not supposed to be hearing inside. Inside, you know, team headquarters slash houses now, I guess. So,
but you wonder this, okay, on that. The draft is Thursday. We're sitting here on Tuesday. We'll have Ed Werder here in about 15 minutes. We're going to talk to him a little bit about trades and all that stuff. But do you would think that the technology side of the NFL would say, hey, you know, yesterday in the rehearsal, we got to figure out how to put a delay in. We have to put a delay in of 10 seconds, 15 seconds, whatever it is, because we can't trust these guys. And they're going to say, yeah, we can't take this kid because he's got X. It's a HIPAA violation, right? He's got this going on. That kid, not a chance.
Scott Van Pelt made a similar suggestion, basically saying that we might see a little more fill time with the hosts, and teams won't be so urgent to rush and put their pick in until they are certain. Like the IT person sitting next to them says, okay, yeah, you're all set from a technology side to make this pick. Like in the past, it was usually, okay, one team makes a pick and the other team's on the clock and they don't need the full allotment of time. You know, in 2 minutes, they go up and make the pick. Maybe the first round will go a lot slower this year because teams are just going to be really, really conscious about what they're doing.
They got to figure out a way to get Goodell booed just because that's part of the deal. They just, you know, if it's, we need 20 Jets fans that are social distance at this corner at this time, and you guys all stand 8 feet apart. And when we say go, Goodell will walk up from his basement and you boo the hell out of him. Right? I mean, because that's part of the draft is Roger Goodell gets crushed every year.
It's a good point.
It happens. It's part of the draft. No, I'm looking forward to the draft a bit more than in the past. I found drafts the last few years. I don't know if it's just looking at the Cardinals and just in disgust with a losing record and so on and so forth. And last year was pretty obvious it was going to be Kyler Murray to me. And they had been such a train wreck the last few years. Now they've turned the corner. Now there's some enthusiasm. Now there's some optimism. Okay, what does the record show the last 4 years? So, you know, push through on that. It's fine. I'm intrigued by them. I guess when I see that Joe Burrow's been hanging out with Peyton Manning, that's really interesting to me because Peyton's been telling him, look, I got my head kicked in the first year. Here's what it's like to go 3-13. And I saw where Peyton Manning said it's okay if he breaks my interception record for his rookie year. Did you see the Last Dance finally? Did you watch it?
Because yesterday I did. Yeah, I did. I watched the second one last night.
What'd you think?
I thought it was much better than the first one, actually. Because really? I was happy they dug a little deeper into Scottie Pippen. Because he's always been...
Oh, that stuff was great. Yeah.
He's always been the second fiddle. I had no idea he had like 12 siblings. I had no idea he grew like 6 inches between his, freshman, sophomore year at Central Arkansas or something like that. But I thought... The first one kind of laid the groundwork, and not to say that it wasn't very good, because it was, but the second one really caught my attention, just because it's still focused on Jordan, but they started mixing in some more of the characters, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Well, look, you have to have villains. If you're going to have a documentary that's this long, you have to have villains, and if the villains are just Bill Laimbeer... And the Pistons and the Knicks and Spike Lee for 10 episodes, that's not going to cut it. I found it interesting, some very smart people that I read or I'll talk to that pointed out that, you know, LeBron's not in the first 8 episodes. LeBron, on the night of the event, tweeted about his reality TV show that his company produces over on NBC. MJ does not have a social media account. LeBron didn't put one tweet out about Last Dance, didn't put one tweet out about anything, and that there is this behind-the-scenes, like, power play of MJ saying, I'm still all that, and LeBron saying, no, you're really not, I'm all that. Charles is mixed into this because Charles spoke last week about how he and Michael don't have a relationship now because of Charles being critical of him with Charlotte, which he should be. Because right. Charlotte has been bad. But when you get guys that are in rarefied air and they don't think that they should have anybody question them, even when Charlotte stinks, we all know it. But this MJ LeBron thing to me is really interesting.
LeBron is going to have a show like this at some point. I guarantee there's going to be some 10 series episodes, you know, looking back on LeBron's career. And one last thing, Brad, before I toss this back to you. Hearing Michael Jordan get all over his teammates in practice was fascinating. Because like you said, there was like, back then, there wasn't social media. There weren't, you didn't just get that access 25 years ago or however long it was. So,
I feel like, yeah, I'm looking forward to this week, but I would like to see, I think the fact that Jerry Krause, and God rest his soul, he's not there to protect himself on any of this stuff, and there was nothing about the Pistons, and there was a little on the Celtics, because there had to be. They could have played that whole, you know, the Bulls-Pistons rivalry thing up, and they didn't. So I'm really looking forward to this week. And Rodman, I've always liked Dennis Rodman. I've never been one of those guys that says, I don't want Dennis Rodman on my team. I want Dennis Rodman's on my team. On the other side, we're going to talk, you're going to hear a clip on the other side from Greg Byrne, the athletic director at Alabama. He was with us this past week on college football being played next spring, potentially. Then we're going to dive into this Stuart Mandel column today in The Athletic about what he is hearing, what it may look like, where college football would start on January 1st, and what the downside would be or could be. That's next. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. So we're going to put the draft over to the side for a minute. In about 10 minutes, Ed Werder will be with us. He'll be covering the Cardinals for ESPN on draft night. So Stuart Mandel had a column today in The Athletic, and it's resonated with something that we did last week on this show. And I want to give context to what we did. That was Greg Byrne was with us, the athletic director at Alabama. The Crimson Tide AD oversees one of the largest, if not the largest, financial athletic department out there. And we talked about football, and when it comes to Alabama and football, of course, they want to be out on the field and play. And I asked him directly about the idea of not having the traditional start time, the way that it is sounding, the way Dr. Fauci is sounding and others, that we may not see, and now that the presidents of universities have said there's not going to be a football season if school is not back in session as of yet. So with that as the backdrop, here's the conversation I had with Greg, and then we're going to talk about it further. The college football season next spring, could you see pushing football all the way back to spring as an option?
I think it just goes back to, we need to continue to plan for the fall. I know our football program is going to plan for the fall. And then as time goes on and we have more information on when is that right time to return, then we'll adjust as we need to. And so could a possibility be a spring? Sure, it absolutely could be. And, you know, what that looks like, the timing of it, when we need to make that decision, we're not there yet. But at the same time, too, we need to be open-minded because of the unique circumstances we're under right now.
That was Greg Byrne, and that was last week. So Stuart Mandel today wrote that a second virus it's been out there, that the second virus may hit this fall, according to the health experts. May hit this fall. We don't know that as for sure. It's like the Spanish flu. And that students have to be on campus, according to the presidents. So what if there was March Madness as a potential for a two-sports celebration? If students are allowed, we'll get to football players in a minute, students are allowed back on campus in November, started their classes, football season would need 6 to 8 weeks. If there was testing of players by November, you have to have testing in place. Right now, that is not in place. So this idea of on April 22nd, 21st, that that we're going to have a college football season on time, it's starting to run out of runway, starting to, because we don't have that space of getting players tested. There was a study by Seton Hall last week that showed that 72% of Americans in this study said they would not feel safe going to a sporting event this year because of COVID-19. So if they were to start these games on January 1st, we don't know where the NFL is and all that, but on first blush, Eric, if you have college football starting on January 1st and college basketball started at the same time, and the two came together with a celebration, Final Four, national title, all these bowl games in March, how would that fit for you?
I'd be fine with it. I would not be fine with it if I lived anywhere from the Midwest east, because, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska got snow last week and we're in mid-April. So if you're starting games in early January at outdoor venues in cold weather cities, have fun with that.
So what if you played those games, and Stuart did address this, what if you played some of those games indoors at Indianapolis, or figure out places within the Big Ten where they have the Big Ten title game?
Sure.
Indianapolis. What if you're in Syracuse and you have a dome? Where are places around the country that have domes, down in New Orleans at the Superdome, down in Texas? So obviously out here, the weather would be amazing. It would be tremendous. But if you're in Big Ten country, Big 12 country, it's a completely different story, to your point. So if you had to play neutral, how would that work? Would fans of the Big Ten still show up to see Michigan, Ohio State? Sure they would. But would they show up to see Maryland against Iowa State? You know what I mean? I don't think they would.
And I think that it would further muddy the national championship picture if it got to, well, so-and-so played a home game, and then the next week they had a scheduled home game, but they actually had to fly halfway across the country to get to a dome, and it became a neutral site game. So that has to be taken into consideration when we're looking over. There's just a lot of variables that we don't know. The second thing that popped in my mind was, what is that going to do for kids that are supposed to be at the NFL Combine around Valentine's Day? So,
if you're Trevor Lawrence, do you even bother to play?
That's a great point.
If you're Trevor Lawrence, is there even a reason to play?
Instead of sitting out a bowl game your senior year, you're basically just sitting out your senior year?
Yeah, you're sitting out your senior year. You're already into January. And so if you're Trevor Lawrence, you know, fill in the blank over at Arizona State, whoever that player might be at ASU next year, if it's Chase Lucas, okay, I'll just throw a name out. If it's somebody that is thinking that they're going to get drafted with the opportunity to play, why play next year? Why put yourself in that jeopardy? And beyond that, you know that agents are going to sit there and talk to those guys starting as soon as, yeah, the season's pushed back to January. Yo, man, you just come work. Let's get working. We'll get you paid. We'll get you the tailored suits. We'll get you the car deal. Come work out with our trainer in Redondo Beach or wherever.
Right.
And you don't need to go to college. Now, on the basketball side of it, same thing on basketball in terms of, yeah, you're in indoors, but are you going to have problems even getting to games? Now, it's a different deal because they already are in place on January, February, March. So the non-conference games, you lose the revenue that you would have had in games in November and December. But are you going to have some college players saying, you know, that G League's looking pretty good now?
It's an option. Yeah, that's an option. I wonder how the basketball fans would like sharing their beloved time in March with the college football fans.
They may wonder about it. I don't think so. I think our country is going to be so hungry. Like, we're already starting to tread on dangerous water with people saying, I miss sports so much. I'm just going to go protest. Really? You're going to go protest? You need to go get a hobby. You haven't been able to find a hobby here? You know, let your hair grow. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
you know?
I agree. Like yesterday on or last week on 2020 Vision, we had Jake Martinelli, the Horizon quarterback. He's done 10 puzzles already. 10. And he's like, he's going to be an engineer. He's a super smart kid. He's like, yeah, I'm on the hunt for more puzzles. I've done all the puzzles that we have in our house.
That's
like,
awesome.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's awesome. All right, Ed Werder's on the other side. Stay with us. Right, when I found out that Ed Werder was going to be able to join us on the show, I was very excited about this because Ed is one of those people that in following the NFL through the years, he is just nails on things, ESPN veteran reporter. He is going to be covering the Cardinals, Dallas, Seattle, and Denver all during the draft starting this Thursday night and probably even, I'm sure even now, he's cramming for his homework and nice enough to have Ed join us for a couple of minutes. How are you doing family-wise with everything with quarantine and trying to balance draft first and foremost on a personal level, Ed?
Well, Brad, thanks for the invitation to come on and talk about the Cardinals and other NFL teams and their plans for the most unique draft in NFL history. And sort of the Super Bowl for anybody who might be a hacker in the computer tech world. We're doing well. I've spent a lot of time at creating access and developing information to cover the four teams that you mentioned I'll be responsible for. Our daughter works in a nursing home, so we've been trying to be careful with how she interacts with the patients and is taking every necessary precaution in our son is a police officer, so he's a first responder. So,
wow.
My wife and I have been able to remain in seclusion quite easily, and that's allowed me to concentrate on my work in a way that's not normally attainable.
Do you have to rehearse for Thursday night, like more than ever? Are you guys rehearsing even this week leading up to Thursday night?
You know, they might be in Bristol. Because they're integrating, you know, a lot of people from a lot of different locations and using some of the NFL network personnel as well for the first time. So I would guess that they're doing a lot of that back there. We are not doing that here because as reporters, our setup is as it has been for, you know, a few months now in that everybody's home office has been converted into a television studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we can actually get live on ESPN with relative, you know, quality video using an iPad or, in my case, an iPhone. They've sent us lighting. You know, we've all spent a lot of time and some of our own financial resources making sure we have interesting things in the background. It seems like one of the great pastimes is for viewers now being invited into reporters' homes and analysts' homes, you know, kind of taking a look around in the room as to how things are arranged and what articles they've acquired for the purpose. So, but no, we haven't done any of those sorts of things. But we've, you know, as we've gained equipment, we've had to test it out and so forth. But I know mine works for the most part because I've already been on television doing it for the last couple weeks.
Ed Werder with ESPN, veteran reporter covering the draft. He'll cover the Cardinals. He'll cover Dallas. He'll cover Seattle. He'll cover Denver. I'm really fascinated on the behind the scenes. So let's just use Denver as an example. John Elway sits there. He likes to trade. We could use Steve Keim if you'd like. But for the argument's sake here, you get word that there's going to be something. How quickly can you get it to ESPN in this world to get you on the air to break your information or to have some context to something if one of those four teams does something major? How quickly?
Yeah, I think it could be, you know, done quickly in terms of alerting them at least via text message that I have something, whether they elect to come to me or just have somebody on the main set use that information is their decision. And I would guess for the most part in these circumstances, they're going to choose to just take the information and not come live to the reporter in the field, which, you know, it's always very challenging as a reporter elsewhere with the team to get on during the actual draft broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
There just isn't a lot of time between picks. And by the time, you know, Mel Kiper goes through sort of the tape and you go around the table, hey, the next pick's either already in or it's coming in 30 seconds. And so there's a tendency to want to announce the pick, show some highlights, and then kind of move forward with the conversation as to, okay, who's up next and what are they likely to do? You know, the time between picks goes very fast. It's very challenging to get on. In fact, I can remember being on site with the Broncos in Denver when Josh McDaniels was the coach, and it was because I had pretty strong indications that they were going to pick Tim Tebow. Mm. And so I was there for that. They had three first round picks that year, and I was there. And when they drafted Tebow originally, I said, okay, I'm ready to go on the air. I spent a half hour with Josh McDaniels in his office the day before the draft. I got some great stuff about his interactions with Tebow 24 hours before they picked him. And I could barely get on in that circumstance. So it's a challenge to me. You know, our role is sort of supplemental for the most part in terms of leading in the, you know, SportsCenter shows, NFL Live shows leading up to the draft each day and during the course of this week. And then sort of kind of reviewing things afterward, explaining why teams did what they did. For example, one of the things I'll tell my coaches and the general managers that I'm assigned to, and part of it is because of the relationship the reporter has with that team and its personnel, is, hey, I'll say to Steve Keim, look, Steve, I can't scoop the pick anyway. You know, they don't want us to tell the viewer who the pick's going to be. They want the commissioner to announce the pick and create whatever natural drama comes from that. So in recent years, the NFL Network and ESPN reporters have been advised not to scoop the pick.
Yep.
Either even on social media. And so with that agreement in place, I think the best thing, the best use of my insight is to ask these people, why did you make that pick? What were your other options? And why did you pick, make the decision that you did, whether it was trade in, trade out, take this player over that player? Why did you do it? I mean, there's always rationale. And to me, that is of value to fans in explaining the decisions that are made on draft night.
It's really well put. ESPN's Ed Werder with us. You'll see him on draft night with the Cardinals, Dallas, Seattle, Denver, the four teams that he's been assigned to. The Wunderlich score and Tua, you've covered this league a long time. Wunderlich scores getting out is not something the NFL likes. Has that really thrown a wrench into this draft, or is this just something to pass time to Thursday night?
You know what? I think 20 years ago, it was information that was rarely gotten, and so it was perceived differently and more important in the public than it is now. I don't think it reflects poorly on Tua. I think the bigger concern with Tua is his injury history. I don't think many people have any questions about whether he's a smart enough guy to play quarterback. He's done it at the highest level in one of the most successful programs in the country. He unseated a successful player who is older than him at the position, and he's excelled for one of the most demanding coaches in the history of college football. So other than the injury history, I really don't think there are any significant concerns regarding Tua, but those injury concerns and taking place as they are in this current environment where teams don't know as much about prospects as they normally do. He hasn't been able to go get medically rechecked by interested teams' own medical staffs. You know, they did the one physical a week, 10 days ago for the benefit of all, and all that information was circulated to all teams. But, you know, a team like the San Diego Chargers picking six might have real interest in Tua if he falls to them. But Tom Telesco, the general manager, is a guy who worked under Bill Polian, and he's been trained to, you know, he's only comfortable if he knows all the answers to every question, and a team picking Tua is not going to know that.
He's the wild card in all this, isn't he, Ed? Because I think in the Cardinals' case, I've said if one of the quarterbacks, if Herbert or Tua is still sitting there at eight, then Steve's got to trade out and trade back and get more picks. It just would seem natural.
You don't think
he's
been your quarterback 3 years in a row?
right. That'd be something. but it feels like that if one of those two slide to eight, that all of a sudden, and I don't know about the Jordan Love, all of a sudden, could he be the guy that's a top 10? It sounds crazy, but that stuff's out there in the agent world, for a few of them at least, that we've talked to. I mean, look at eight for the Cardinals, one as what makes the most sense, and two, if one of those two quarterbacks is there, Steve's got to trade back.
Well, to me, the most prominent question for Steve and for Cliff, with the Cardinals having another top 10 pick, the eighth overall pick, is, you know, do they value an offensive tackle to protect their franchise quarterback in Kyler Murray, who was sacked an NFL high 48 times his rookie year? Or do they covet a defensive lineman slash pass rusher to take some of the attention away from Chandler Jones for a defense that, despite his 19 and a half sacks last year, ranked dead last in the NFL? So to me, Steve and Cliff and Michael Bidwell, those to me are their two choices. Do they have the same decisions to make should they have the opportunity to move back? I'm sure they'd love a quarterback to fall to eight to create the potential of them getting more value and still acquiring a player that they really like. But having one of the reasons I picked the Cardinals is because I have pretty good access to people there. And Mark Dalton, the PR guy, is invaluable. He's already created access for everybody covering the draft to talk to Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim during the last week. And one of the interesting things that Steve said was, in his mind, there are 8 to 10 blue-chip prospects in this draft who could come in and play right away and be expected to start on a successful team. So if you're at 8 and you only have 10 of those guys, assuming the quarterbacks are in the 10, then you can't move back very far without putting yourself in a position where you're not getting one of the blue chip prospects you could have had. So I think there's a limited amount of spots that the Cardinals will be willing to move back. And it would take probably a lot to get that. And a quarterback being there often causes teams to overpay for that draft spot. But I don't see the Cardinals going back very far.
Last question before I get you out of here. And we're talking with Ed Werder with ESPN, of course, who'll be covering the draft. The Cowboys, the Seahawks, the Broncos, and Cardinals, you'll see them throughout the weekend on ESPN starting on Thursday night. And that is, doesn't it just seem natural that teams, because of all this uncertainty for general managers, and there's been creature of habit and some complaining about it, that they've got to get some of their trades done here early in the week to midweek, not done, but just letting someone know, is there a lot going on this week more so than ever versus a natural draft where they have those 15 minutes to try to accomplish something?
Yeah, I think when I've talked to general managers, the two biggest concerns that they have about this virtual draft as it's planned, and they're doing a mock draft today, all the teams in the league are involved in this this morning to go through it and see if there are any issues that they need to resolve. But the two biggest things that came through were the ability to make trades and then what happens in terms of the free-for-all for undrafted players immediately after, round seven ends on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Those, to me, are based on what I've heard from general managers, those are the two biggest issues. As for the point you make about trades, and it's a good one, I think there'll be a lot of activity these next few days for veteran players in particular. We've seen that, in recent years. For example, when the Rams traded up for Jared Goff and when the Eagles traded up in 2016, for the quarterback that they took, Carson Wentz, both those trades were executed in the days in advance. And so there are some veteran players out there that we expect to be, potentially offered in deals. I would be surprised if there aren't a handful of deals involving veteran players before we get to Thursday night.
I appreciate your time and insight. Good luck. It sounds like it'll be a lot of fun, a three-ring circus, but I agree with what you said even before we started the interview about this is a good distraction for the country and what we're going through at the end of the day. Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Brad. Enjoyed it.
There's Ed Werder with us, ESPN and veteran reporter. He will be with the Cardinals, Dallas, Seattle, and Denver virtually covering those four teams for ESPN in the draft on Thursday night and through the weekend. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Sorensen. We are pleased to jump into another 2020 Vision guest. Today, we're going to catch up with Connor Tosi, senior linebacker at Saguaro, one of my favorite players to watch off the field and on the field, but mostly off the field. I'll get to that in a second. Connor, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to see you. All right, I'm going to start a little different today. I'm going to kind of give you the backstory, the quarantine backstory of some of your 2020 Vision cohorts that I've had on. Let's see. So Jake Martinelli, Horizon quarterback, says he has already completed 10 puzzles. Paxton Earl from Arcadia said he has been perfecting his TikTok game. Blake Gomez from Verado says he has been playing a lot of ping pong. Marcus Libman from Pinnacle has been hiking with his mom to stay active, both mentally and physically. What have you been doing during the quarantine to scratch the itch?
Legos.
Lagos?
Yeah. Been hiking a lot, and I've been fishing a ton.
All right. Well, take us through some of your fishing escapades and tell us how that's gone.
So I probably go 5 times a week, I'd say. And I go to this one little spot on the golf course. I can't really tell anybody because it's a secret spot to fish to go. But, I mean, that little place is stocked with everything. And right now I'm trying to figure out how to catch these. There's some massive carp in there.
All right. Well, I'm somewhat aware of that Saguaro secret fishing spot, but we'll just keep that between us. I know that goes back a few years in the Saguaro football family. All right. So for those of you that don't know Connor's backstory, Connor played behind a couple of really good linebackers at Saguaro that are now playing college football, and he waited his turn patiently. Last spring, he suffered what turned out to be a career-ending injury. I believe it was an ACL tear.
Yep.
Since that time, he has shown his leadership under head coach Jason Mons, who said Connor is the epitome of what Saguaro football is all about. So we're going to fast forward now to present day. I know a lot of your friends and probably some of your teammates, their spring season of sports was suddenly cut short. What sort of advice have you given them since you missed your entire senior year of football?
Well, you know, I mean, it's like it all just comes back down to like control what you can control. I mean, obviously, this is a very terrible situation, but it's like it's out of our control. So you can't worry about it that much. Like you just have to you have to deal with what you have. And right now they're doing this online meeting. So you just have to be the best at whatever that is. And I mean, that's it. You can't really control it. So you just got to be the best at whatever the situation you're in.
Did you kind of sense after school was suspended the first time that eventually they were just going to cancel you coming back to Saguaro?
Yeah, I had an idea because it's like, I don't know. I just felt it's just not really a risk worth taking. I don't think they're going to send us back to school and risk a large outbreak.
We're not breaking news here. Saguaro is one of, if not the best football programs in the state of Arizona. I've been fortunate enough to see it from the inside out. I know I went with you to Cal Lutheran a couple years ago, did a documentary, which was really fun. As you reflect back on being a Saguaro Sabercat, explain to our audience what that was like, not just on the field and all the success, but the unity and the friendships and the bonds that you've established with all those players and coaches.
I mean, words can't really describe. I mean, it was just incredible. The entire Saguaro program and staff and everybody, just the whole community. And it was just out that I, because my phone was blowing up left and right. I had parents calling me and texting me, teachers emailing me, and everybody just reached out. And I was like, before that, I knew that like we were like a really good family and all that. But after, I was like, dang, like they really do care. It's not all about football here. And it's just everyone has each other's back.
What have you learned about yourself in terms of having that setback and going through that injury, but still being a team first guy? Because you didn't have to go to all the practices. You didn't have to show up to all the meetings. But you did it when I know a lot of other kids that would be in your same situation would just be like, well, I'm not playing. So instead of going to practice, I'm just going to go do something else.
Well, I mean, my parents raised me like that's not really that's immoral for me. You can't really just start something and then just not finish. But I think the thing I learned is life isn't all about football. So, you know, my teammates were counting on me to be a leader. I was trying to do that in any way I can, on and off the field, whether it be helping kids who are new in the program and not really familiarized with our defense, or just being a good mental coach and trying to help them push through their problems and
You played behind Clay Randall, who's now at Air Force, and Connor Soley, who's at ASU. What did you learn most from those older players in terms of not just how to handle your business on the field, but maybe more importantly, how to handle it off.
Well, they both told me how important it was to just take your business in the classroom, take care of business in the classroom. Because, I mean, obviously, like Clay Randall, I was really interested in the academies during the spring before my injury. And Clay Randall was a big part of me being interested. And he just told me, there's no chance you even touch an academy if you have anything subpar grade-wise. So I really tried to focus on my grades. And, I mean, it's still – I've always been the number one. Play football if you don't have the grade to do it. So that's what I've been doing, just keeping on top of my grades. And Connor Sully is just kind of he's taught me how to like adhere to adversity. He during the track season last year, he had a couple of hip injuries and he was upset about it. And this was before my injury, so he was just like, man, this sucks, but can't really do anything about it, so I just got to rehab it, and I'll get back out there.
Off the field, as we move towards the middle of spring, and eventually we're going to get to the summer here within the next few weeks, what has been the plan at Saguaro with both prom and graduation? Those are two big, cool events that you kind of look forward to going into the second semester of your senior year. Catch up to speed on that.
Well, as of right now, I'm pretty sure prom is completely done. There has been talks about graduation being moved to a later date. One of them was in June. One of them was in the fall. And one of them was in November. But it's like, I don't want to go to college and then come back here and graduate. Like, I'd rather just complete my high school career, my whole 4 years of high school before I go to college. So we'll see though.
Hey, it is what it is. Control, you can control, right?
Exactly.
What have you been doing to stay close with the guys? Has it been group texts? Have you been on Zoom? Yeah. I mean, are you still sitting in on like all of Mons's Zoom sessions?
I wish I was, just for like the team bonding aspect, because I really missed that a lot. Like, I just missed even just the practices, like the Zero Dark Thursdays. Like, that's that, because that's right there is when you become a team. That's when you are closest to each other, because you guys are all in pain. You all want to say, get me the hell out of here. But you just keep pushing with each other, and you just feel more bonded than ever. But yeah, me and my guys, we're in a big group chat, and we all roast each other a lot. So
there you go.
Get a few laughs out of there.
Nice. All right. Well, leave me with this. When you and I spoke back in December, you weren't totally sure if you were going to try to play college football. You didn't know where you were going to go to school. Most importantly, what has been the decision, first of all, on school, and second of all, if you're going to continue playing?
So as of right now, I'm going to the University of Arizona. Still trying to decide whether or not I should. I'm going to walk on, but you know, with this time, I know, like, training facilities are really open. The gyms aren't open. So, I mean, it'll just kind of have to be a game time decision.
I got you. Hey, it was great catching up. It's good to see you. You look good. And thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. That's Connor Tosi, linebacker at Saguaro High School, today's 2020 Vision guest.